Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest PMH Atwater. She has been on the show many times. I believe the last time was for her book, A Manual for Developing Humans, and she has many other books that she's written listed on her website, and we'll give you that information in a minute. Today, we're just going to be talking about general topics, the universe in modern times, and see where the interview takes us. Welcome, PMH. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, and I love this kind of open mic.
Right. Well, you had originally come into the, I guess, the spiritual and metaphysical world because of a near-death experience. Is that correct?
Well, kind of, sort of. I originally came into this world in 1966. When I had what was called then a nervous breakdown.
Okay,
I was working really, really hard, had three kids, finally couldn't take it anymore, and they put me on a pill, a little triangular light blue pill. And taking one per day, I was a one half of one per day, I was a raving drunk, couldn't handle it. And so the doctor finally said, you know, he said, you have the most sensitive human body I've ever seen. If you'd have ever taken up drinking or smoking, you would be dead by the age of 18. Why didn't you do it? Everybody does it. Mm-hmm. And I told him about the promise I made to God when I was 9 years old. Standing in front of God's altar all by myself, I said, I will never drink, I will never smoke, and I will never use your name in vain. And I kept that promise. And he said, oh, well, I want you to go home right now and get down on your hands and feet and thank God you made that promise, because that's all that kept you alive. And found out later, you know, that I do indeed have a very, very sensitive system. Well, that sort of led me to find out, okay, why? You know, why am I so different? I've had all these memories all my life. I've been different all my life. Why? And that's when I discovered Edgar Cayce and got into that study. I joined a Search for God study group. And then that opened the doors to everything. I mean, I became a professional hypnotherapist specializing in past life regressions, national biorhythm experiments. I mean, you name it, I was in it. But I was never in it just for me, ever. It was always that I had to find out what it was like for everybody else. So I was teaching, having classes, experiments, started in a forum, Idaho's first nonprofit metaphysical corporation. I was dealing with people by the thousands. I don't know why in this life I've never done anything small, but I haven't. It's always big, because I always had to know more. You know, this is what it's like for me. What is it like for you? And I was always gone that extra, you know, wanting to know more and more and more what it was like for other people. And that was great. You know, learned a lot, had a lot of experiences, became a professional ghost debuster in haunted houses. I mean, you name it, I was doing it. Mm-hmm. And I finally came to this point where it just felt like, you know, that old saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will come. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I'd have sort of done it all, which is a crazy thing to say. Nobody has done it all. But I just had that sense that I was ready now for a new teacher, because I'd done everything I knew to do. And that's when I died. And
well,
I died.
You know, it's so interesting, because probably there would be nobody on earth that could teach you, but because spirituality is experiential. And what greater experience than a very educational near-death experience.
Well, I was raped.
You know, some near-death experiences are not educational, as you know.
Yeah, well, mine certainly was.
Right.
Yeah, I died three times in 3 months in 1977, and then later that fall, I had three relapses from complications. So,
it's a hard route to go. It's very hard physically and emotionally, I'm sure. You wonder if you're being abandoned, you know.
Had to relearn everything, how to stand, how to crawl, how to walk.
Right.
Tell the difference between left and right, see properly, hear properly, and rebuild all my belief systems. So, you know, I began again with crawling, literally, and took it all again from the ground up and learning it very, very differently. And in my third near-death experience, I was told to be a researcher. Which is kind of funny because on top of everything else, before I died, I finally came to that point in my life when I decided I wanted to do things differently. I wanted to be like a normal person. So I decided I wanted to be a bank manager, and I was taking classes for the American Institute of Banking. And I was really determined, you know, this is it for me. You know, I've had enough of this other stuff. I'm going the regular, normal route. And that's when I died. So I was flipped out into... flipped out into what I can't even call a world.
It's really a universe of...
Yeah, it was an essence.
A multidimensional universe at that. But you got so much more material and information and, I guess, ability to research because you were exposed to an entirely different plane of
existence. Well, I was raised, when I was a kid, you know, I had five fathers, two mothers, but one of those fathers turned out to be the love of my life in the sense of the greatest father in the world, and he was a police officer. Mm-hmm. And so I often was with him. I was often at the police station.
Great.
And I would watch him carefully, listening carefully for everything in the police station. I was absorbing it like a sponge. And Dad always said to me, the body says more than the mouth does.
Mm-hmm.
So I used police investigative techniques as my protocol. That's where it came from.
Right.
So I've been researching since 1978. And just to give everybody, and you especially, a little clue of what's coming next year, because I'm just now finishing up chapter 17 of 17 chapters, so I'm on the last chapter, and then I've got the back matter to do and then send it into the publisher. I call it the Forever Angels. It is about the impact of near-death experiences on the newly born, babies, toddlers, little kids, lifelong. So what I've done with this book, you know, I've already done children. I did that in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And that book is The New Children and Near-Death Experiences. And my research base then was 277. Mostly kids and young adults. So looking forward. This time, I went after the mature adult. That is to say, I wanted people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and I got a lot of them. And the question was, look back over your life. What difference did your near-death experience make? You know, first of all, they had to verify that they had it during that time frame. And then what difference did it make, if any, in your life? At home, with siblings, school, relationships, sex, jobs, marrying, if indeed you married, jobs, alcohol, drugs, did you get into any of that? Describe your life to me. What difference did it make?
What about the fear of death?
You don't find the fear of death with little kids. Very, very seldom. With the little ones, they look at you kind of funny and wonder where you're coming from. So they
Do you think the people who are adults now that had early near-death experiences have a marked lack of fear of death compared to, say, people who didn't?
Yes. Yes.
So it really doesn't matter what age.
Right.
If you have a near-death experience, you end up with a lack of fear of, I mean, no fear of death.
Most people, not everybody.
And most people, unless you have probably a negative near-death experience, which can happen with certain people, kind
right.
of like as a warning. Is to
well, especially in other cultures.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
you get into Africa and Asia, and you get a lot of hellish cases.
Well, yeah, because they're practicing some hellish
yeah.
religions. So,
yeah. But you know,
yes.
with this batch,
mm-hmm.
Even though I'm taking this larger look, in other words, the first one looking forward, this one looking back, looking in
right.
reverse, you know, what was it really like for you? With this group, Dr. Kolb, I've got the biggest variety of people I've ever had, and I'm thrilled about that. I've got every sex you can imagine, including transgendered. I've got every race, people from all over the world. I've got people who were raised in the voodoo culture, not Christianity at all. People who were raised in the Buddhist culture. But one of the things that really almost tore my heart open was I also got three people, all of them females, interestingly enough, who the only reason they were ever born, that their parents ever wanted them, was because the parents were part of a satanic cult and they wanted babies to torture.
Yeah.
And one of them, especially, I talk about her case a lot. Her first near-death experience was at the age of 6 weeks. She had 17 by the time she was 9.
Wow.
So I take a good look at her. Of course, everybody. A lot of drawings in the book. A lot of people with past life memories, alien memories. You name the memory, they probably have it. It's a particular study that enables me to go horizontal. You know, always we have the vertical questions, like scientific
right.
protocol. We've got the vertical questions. We don't, I'm the only one I think of that uses horizontal questions. In other words, open. So I'm sort of looking for essays rather than answers to a questionnaire.
Right.
Because I want to see edges. I want to see subtleties. And then if I go back to ask other questions, that's fine. But I don't want to pre-program anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want any kind of bias.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what they know. And among the things that really got me was I've got people, no kidding, in their 70s and 80s who never had an opportunity to talk about their near-death experience. Ever, never. These were accomplished adults, professionals.
Well, when they had it, it wasn't even termed near-death experience.
Well, yes, but to talk about anything like that.
Right.
And
so how did you get your subjects?
I just put the word out. I originally put together one page of what I was looking for and sent it out over the internet, took it with me to every talk I gave, passed it out everywhere. The International Association of Near-Death Studies was very kind to publish it in some of their material. I mean, it really went out all over, but it still took 3 years for me to get all the people.
And how many people are did
only you talk 120? To? But when I compare the 120 with the 277, that gives me almost 400 people.
Right.
So I really feel like I've really got a good study. So we'll all wait till next year.
Right.
when the forever angels come forward.
Okay. Forever angels come forward.
Yeah. And in the meantime, what do you want to talk about?
Why don't you give your website information first?
So okay.
we can do that, and then we'll go into, I would go into ascension energies, because I think we're all in the midst of it right now.
Oh, well, we're in the midst of a whole bunch of stuff. My website, certainly, www.simplypmhatwater.com. So it's all lowercase, pmhatwater.com. And you may want, hopefully, to subscribe to my free monthly newsletter. Get into the newsletter. There's an archive. Once you get into the archive, you will definitely want last month's newsletter, July, because we're going to be talking about some of that, the dates and what's going on with energy right now.
Well, thank you. And the other thing is if people want to go to plasticos.com under resources and radio, several interviews are in that area as well. If you want to, hear an interview on one of PMH's last books.
Okay, that would be fun. You know, times are kind of crazy now. Even right now, getting on your show.
Yeah.
And I just like to sort of color that a little bit with information.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We are in what is now called a retrograde storm. This is not just Mercury retrograde. This is a retrograde storm. That is to say, there's a lot of planets all retrograde at the same time. This storm began on June 26th. It ends fully on September 6th. Actually, I think it's pretty much over by the 3rd of September, but, give you a few more days there. What's unique about this is during this period, of course, planets go in and out of retrograde, but during this period, at all times since June 26th, we have had at least 5 planets retrograde at the same time. Then between August 7 and 19, so that's where we are right now, We have 6 planets retrograde. This has not happened in modern history. So we're getting slammed with energy that is not going the direction we want it to go. And of course, you're familiar, hopefully most of your audience is familiar with the fact that what we mean by retrograde, when we're looking at a particular planet, let's say we're looking at Mercury, and it appears to be going backward, well, it really isn't. It's an optical illusion between that orbit and Earth.
Right.
So we have this optical illusion happening, and whenever that kind of energy is present, then it tends to make that energy on this planet a little strange. Retrograde simply means the energy goes within. So you deal with it within. So what are the inner things that this is really good at? Well, it can be really good at talking and visiting, researching, maybe relaxing, praying, meditating, doing all those kind of inner activities. Mm-hmm. But if you try to do something outside, like our regular world of business and travel, things don't go too well.
Right.
So instead of just having a small period of time, like retrograde Mercury, mm-hmm. where maybe it's, 28 days or so, we're having this long period that covers all of the summer. So all summer long, we're being forced to go within when, because of our business or operations or activities, we want to go, we want to go without. And not without in the sense of we want to be very busy.
Right.
We want to do things in the busy world, and it just isn't working. So we're getting accidents. We're getting all kinds of stuff. I mean, just look at your newspaper. Mm-hmm. Look on your own block where you're living. Look in your own life. It's just phenomenal what's happening to people.
Now, Mars went retrograde. Has it come back direct yet?
I don't have my ephemeris in front of me. Well, let me see. Mars.
I think
it doesn't go direct until the 28th of August.
Okay. Because that can lead to different things, too, than just travel and communication
problems. Yeah, it's retrograde,
too.
Well, right now, we've got six of them, you know.
Right.
So this is big time. None of us have lived through this before. So this is
now. Does that mean the Earth is on the other side of the Sun from these planets? I mean, if you think about it,
not being a good astronomer, I can't be clear at that. I only know that there's this optical illusion occurring,
mm-hmm.
and it's happening with six different planets and their energy.
Well, if you think about it, if the planets are close to us on the elliptical, and they're both going around the sun, if we looked at them, they'd be going the same way we are. But if we're on the opposite side of the sun and we look at them, they might
be
going the other way. You see?
Yeah, I haven't tried to be real practical about how it's going.
I just wonder if we're somewhere interesting that we haven't been for a while, you know, in terms of the planets' and relationship to Earth and the sun. Since it hasn't happened in modern times. I mean,
no,
may not happen very often.
Very, very unusual, and especially right now until the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all need to be a little bit careful.
And then we also need to be careful because we are entering, they call it the Great Rift, the galactic center.
Oh, yeah, I call it
and
the Great Shift.
And that is probably the most interesting thing since it probably doesn't happen except every
25,920 years to be
there
exact.
You go. To be exact. I knew it was somewhere.
Yeah, if you want to be exact, why?
Well,
yeah, never
that's a long
before.
Time.
Yeah.
That probably would put
no
us back
that
with
we
the
know
ice
of.
Age.
Yeah, I lived quite through that, at least.
Yeah.
At least not for a while. But, yeah, huge things. And because of that, I'd like to just share very briefly some of the patterns to come. And again, you can get this in the July issue of my newsletter.
Okay.
We've got from 2020 to 2024. Now,
mm-hmm.
that certainly will be the next presidential election.
Right.
So the next presidential term of office, 2020 through 2024, this is a time of our Pluto return. Now, return
mm-hmm.
is when a planet goes back to its place when you were born. So with Pluto, that's like a 248-year orbit. So it takes a long time to go back. People don't have Pluto returns. We don't live that long. But
right.
countries can, and the United States will, during this time frame, 2020 mm-hmm. through 2024. Now, Pluto is the planet of extremes. When we're talking about the energy of Pluto, what it's associated with, what it seems to be involved in, are extremes. We're talking, you know, kind of a Scorpio kind of thing. That is
mm-hmm.
to say, it's either positive or it's negative. There's no middle ground. So one of the things we note with Pluto, there's no such thing as middle, you know, the saint or the sinner. There's just nobody in between. So we've got that kind of force, that kind of extremism, where
it sounds
it's
like
be
a
really,
revolution.
Really good or not so good.
Sounds like a revolution, which I think we are in the middle of.
Yes.
Or poised
and this
to
will
become.
Bring it to a head.
It hasn't started yet because the arrests haven't begun yet, but it's very close. It's very, very
this
close.
Will bring it to a head.
Yes.
This kind of energy. This is the economically, this is the time of the fourth turning, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, could be, you know, the whole country goes bankrupt. Who knows? Then at 2020.
Well, that probably is the plan, though. They have to bankrupt the country in order to go ahead and issue the new currency
possible.
And start the new system. I mean,
it's possible. And on top of this, on 2024, we're having another solar, we're having another major eclipse. Mm-hmm. Only this time, instead of being a nice one like the last one was, which was horizontal that went across our country and thrilled everybody, this one is a vertical eclipse. And it's going to be passing over all of the major atomic energy stations, energy stations up and down the Midwest, the
so
central
like along
state,
the Mississippi?
And the east. Yeah.
Yeah, because most of the nuclear plants are on a major river.
Yeah, yeah, right up.
So
right up.
Mississippi's the major river in the U.S.
Yeah. Well,
that
the eclipse
sense?
Passes right over that. All
okay.
of them. Sets them all off.
And I think a lot of them are in the south, if
you
I
know,
remember correctly.
What interests me is this eclipse in 2024 is going to fall exactly on the sun in the astrological chart of Prince William.
Really?
I find that very interesting. Prince William. Could he suddenly become the king?
Well, that's very possible. Charles is quite advanced in age for
whatever is going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to be big time, and it's going to be for Prince William. So I just thought I'd add that.
There's probably a chance, too, that Charles will just let it pass over, too.
Oh, I'd love
to
see that
happen. If he doesn't feel like doing it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
and that would be a good time to
He's approaching retirement age, so if he really feels like retirement is better than what he would have to put up as a monarch.
In 2026, Neptune leaves Pisces. Suddenly, nothing is hidden anymore. All the old patterns gets revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, several other things are going on. Robotics then becomes mainstream globally. That's 2026. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at 2013 to 2029, this is supposed to be the height of whatever happens long-term to the United States. This is when we see it in its fullest expression. It's also, we'll also see climate change more fully during that time frame. When we get to 2030, the full force of climate change will be in effect globally. 2050, that's the awakening era. The birthing cycles then shift toward higher states of consciousness with newborns. So we're not quite there yet, but we will be. So you can get all that material certainly off my website. If you go further back, especially last year, you're going to get into all kinds of interesting things that I talk about, like, for instance, the discovery, and this has been scientifically verified, that time is another form of matter. And you can take time and form crystals in which you can store the information from our new quantum computers. They have already created one of these time crystals. They created it last year. It's now working. And it, to my mind, this just blows my mind. I mean, time is a lapse of incidents and, you know, the rolling of the sun and the moon and everything. That, to me, is time. You know, we get older. There's things that happen that are time lapse. But science has now discovered, that's not all what time is. Time is another form of matter, and you can make things out of time that you can use. So that takes the whole idea of time and puts it in another perspective. Certainly, I didn't cover that in my book, Future Memory, but I did cover a lot of how time is very different than what we think it is, and that is not necessarily a lapse of sequences at all. That it's far more than that, and we can use it, we can manipulate it, we can create with it. And yeah, now time, science has proved that.
Time
isn't that a wow?
Yeah, time is limited to this dimension. It's a third dimensional phenomena. So if you imagine if you have abilities in your consciousness to remote view,
right.
You can remote view in the past, in the future, and in the present. So your consciousness is not limited to the third dimension.
Yeah,
and
that's what I get
so
into.
What I tell people is time and space are both constructs. They're constructs. They're artificial. They're part of the Matrix, if you know you watch that
right.
movie. They're part of this dimension and only real in this dimension. And you know that the Course in Miracles says nothing real with a capital R
right.
can be threatened and nothing unreal exists. They're
yeah,
in my husband
teaches
of God.
That.
So if you understand that consciousness, which you are consciousness, you're right. When you die, I mean, you know, just read your books.
right.
You have the research on it. When you die, your consciousness is no longer limited to the third dimension. So obviously, time has to be a construct.
Matter.
And constructs can be manipulated, like you said. The scientists within the third dimension are manipulating the constructs.
But isn't
that wonderful?
But time
isn't real. Space isn't real.
Yeah, but isn't that wonderful? They finally done it, verified it. It's now 100% real. They've discovered it's simply another form of matter. You can do
mm-hmm.
things with it. You can play with it. And it's real. It's real in the sense that you can play with it. It's real in the sense that our consciousness can allow us and enable us to take what seem to be sequential
mm-hmm.
and turn it into whatever it is we want. And we wanted and needed a way to store information from quantum computers. Wow, we now have one. They're called time crystals.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's simply another reason to subscribe to my free monthly newsletter. I put all kinds
right.
of stuff in there.
That's right.
You know, I would really like to have your opinion on this. It was just a couple of days ago in our
mm-hmm.
newspaper here in Charlottesville, Virginia, the infamous Charlottesville, Virginia. One of the headlines on the front page was, see if I can find that headline so I can quote it exactly. I had it right out here. Where is it? Well, here it is. Okay. Here's the health of a mother's gut is tied to autism. They think now that that might be one of the reasons, maybe one of the main reasons, why kids have autism.
Well, my opinion of that is that I've researched a lot of the hard science behind autism, and there are scientific studies showing that the cause of autism is in a particular detoxification defect, which is genetic, which is why children in the same family get autism. It's missing. There's a liver enzyme missing in the detoxification pathway. And so when children get too many vaccines too close together, too close to being born, and their fontanelles are closing, especially prematurely, they get mm-hmm. swelling in the frontal lobe. And they usually get a high fever. They get signs of encephalitis. And they can be rescued with cod liver oil. It's interesting. High doses of cod liver oil will rescue somebody so they don't get autism. So the test, at least the time that the book was written, the test is $125 to see if you have this liver enzyme. And you could probably completely prevent autism if you just didn't give vaccines to the children that have detoxification defects. And now I'm going to go further with that. The majority of people who become ill with from their silicone breast implants leaking also have detoxification defects. So, like MTHFR, COMT, so the chemicals coming out and the silicone coming out is very deadly to them. Whereas somebody who doesn't have a detoxification defect really might have to have a very large silicone toxic exposure to become ill.
Well,
so I would say that what we need to do is study who has detoxification defects and then very soon start them on heavy metal detoxes because obviously we get exposed to heavy metals still.
Yeah.
Start them on hydrophobic chemical detoxes, which is the electrolysis foot bath. Now, hydrophobic chemicals are neurotoxins and carcinogens often they're chemicals that don't dissolve in water. They dissolve in fat. So it's well known that dioxin can cause breast cancer because it is in the fat, and then that's what the chemical is likely to be in the breast because that's the most fatty area, especially in a woman who's not overweight. So I think we know a great deal about all of this, and I think that the mainstream media would love to blame autism on gut health because gut health has been a buzzword lately, and it is important. Gut health is definitely very, very important, but the true cause of autism is linked to the vaccines, mercury and aluminum and other heavy metals in the vaccines.
Hmm. Well, I know when my own kids were young, you got the baby shots. You never got them all at once. They were strung out. It would take several years before you could get them all.
Well, there's a lot more vaccines now. Remember, you and I, we got measles, mumps, and chickenpox, right? You remember getting those?
I sure do.
Okay, now there's a vaccine for them, and that vaccine, especially the rubella one, is not a good one in terms of autism. So we began vaccinating people against non-lethal diseases, and there's just too high of a heavy metal injection into the kids with detoxification defects. And I think it's
much too
high. I think that's really how autism occurs. Now, once you get autism and you look at these children, their guts are a mess, but so are silicone implant patients with defective implants. In other words, high levels of chemicals and heavy metals lead to bad gut health. You see, so it's not that gut health is the cause of it. The cause of it is the genetic defect with the exposure to the chemical.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope all your listeners appreciate it too. That helps me to better understand the claim coming out of the University of Virginia, because they do make that claim that in the development of a child,
just like they're claiming that vitamins can be detrimental to your health. There's all sorts of things on mainstream news that are turned around. I did want to give the listening audience and yourself the book that I'm referring to. It's a book by Stephanie Marone, who wrote a series of mental health books. She's a researcher. She's not a doctor, but she's a researcher.
Right.
And one of her books is on autism, and the scientific studies are in that book. And then Dr. Wakefield has long been in the alternative community trying to educate people about the dangers of vaccines. And all I can say is it's a miracle that he is still alive and hasn't been assassinated. So, but the science is known. It's just that the scientists who were doing the science they tried to shut them up.
Well, I could appreciate that. That usually happens. I don't care what field you're in. if the scientists don't want to hear what you're saying, then things can be very difficult. I know because, you know, that happened to me.
Well, let me tell you a story about, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to tell a story about a CDC researcher, doctor, who was doing studies at the CDC and found out that a lot of the people getting the flu, this last flu, had gotten the flu shot. And he began to talk about that, and then his body was found in the river. And his stuff was at home, his wallet and his keys and everything. He went home because he was sick, and then his body was found in the river, and they said it was suicide. So it's very dangerous. And the last one was an Allergan researcher who took his children on a camping trip and was shot, I think, four times in his tent. So it's dangerous to be a researcher in vaccines, especially if your research is leading in a direction that is not good. And I apologize for interrupting you, but I did want to. These are not coincidences. Okay.
I'm glad that you did. You know, any other way we want to explore? You know, one of the things that I run up against again and again and again in near-death research is that we tend to look at the near-death experience through the eyes of the media. In other words, what the media has told us is what we believe.
Right.
And the media has told us that you go through a tunnel. Well, very few people go through a tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that first scientific poll done by Gallup poll in 1982, only 9% of the people reported going through a tunnel. Now it's about a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that frequent.
Yeah, right.
People seem to think, well, you have to go through this tunnel. Well, you don't. We have also learned when we're looking broadly, and especially mm-hmm. other cultures, we're finding something that I find very, very interesting. That mm-hmm. is to say, when we're talking about the life review, you get the life review reports from more or less the industrialized nations. So we're talking mm-hmm. about the United States, Canada, Europe. That's where you get most of them.
Right.
You very seldom get them anywhere else on the globe. And especially from those cultures that, mm-hmm. that are we-oriented or more tribal-oriented or more community-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
In our cultures, what we call the industrialized nations, we are I cultures.
Right.
I exist. I do things because I chose to. In a we culture, it says we exist together. And
right.
we do things according to how we vote, how we feel, how we are how we want to do it as a group.
Mm-hmm.
So in those nations, those countries, those islands, where you have more of a we culture, you do not have past life reviews. And what we're finding with a past life review is that is dependent on the individual seeing themselves apart. Seeing themselves
mm-hmm.
as an identity apart. In,
right.
in those well, cultures, you don't see it. You know, people don't think of themselves as an idea apart.
I think there's an explanation for that that I read in spiritual literature. Is that what occurs after death has a lot to do with your belief systems. And what they said is that if you believe you have to cross the river Styx, you will have to cross the river Styx, because that was an ancient belief system. So you
well,
will
that's
have to
true
go through
to a
that.
Point. It's not completely true, though.
Right, but this is what this book said. Okay,
okay.
This is coming from a spiritual tradition. It's probably not a Western spiritual tradition. I think it was probably a Buddhist or an Eastern spiritual tradition. But what was said in the book was that the strong belief systems have to be played out Okay. Now, if you don't have a strong belief system, which is a lot of Americans, you probably are open to more of a whatever schedules on the other side. But they said if you believe that you go fishing after you die, then you will go fishing after you die. And when you get tired of fishing, then people will approach you and say, come on, let's get the work done.
Well,
that's all it said. And I think it probably is true if you have a strong
belief.
Well,
it's only true to a point because I looked for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that's not necessarily true. It'll be true in some cases, but the majority of the cases, no. They get something radically different that they didn't believe in, didn't accept, wasn't mm-hmm. even interested in. And that's certainly true in my case. But no, I haven't found that to be true, and especially with children. Of course, a child hasn't had
a child doesn't have a belief.
Yeah, they don't
usually,
have
a
before.
Right.
So with a
they
child,
have no idea.
You get that full range.
Right.
And it's very, very different. But I found that very interesting, and I just thought I'd sort of share mm-hmm. that with everybody that. And, you know, and the idea that most near-death experiences happen in a hospital, not true. There's only about 12 to 27% that do. The rest do not.
Mm-hmm.
So we get this picture from television that the person is in the hospital bed and the machinery is beeping and the doctors and nurses are running around
mm-hmm.
and the family, you know, is just sort of hanging.
Right.
When that is true in only, you know, 12 to 27% of the cases. It just isn't like that.
Can I tell you an interesting near-death experience that I participated
sure.
in?
Sure.
I've never had one, but I participated. I was going into my driveway, and my beeper went off, and it was the DeKalb Medical ER, and I asked if, I always ask about the patient, and I heard that they're going to die. And I said, well, do you want me to go in anyway? And the answer was yes. So I turned around. It's probably about 12 miles. You know, I go in. And sure enough, the patient was a pedestrian MVA, very bad accident. One leg was off, and the patient was shattered with rib fractures and, you know, a whole bunch of things.
Right.
So he had facial lacerations, which is why I was called in. So I'm taking a look at the table, but I notice he's not in his body. He's up in the corner. So he starts talking to me, which
thank
is interesting.
Thank God. You're sensitive
well, they're working
to this.
On him. That's why I had to go in. They're working on him. And he's not flatlined yet, but you can tell that I can't go in and fix the facial lacerations, okay? He's not stable enough. So he starts to talk to me. And I explained to him what happened, because I'm looking at his chart. So I explained to him, you got hit by a car. You've got these injuries, and he's asking me if he should go on or if he should try to come back to his body. And
really?
You know, I said, well, you know, he's asking specific questions like, how long do you think it'll take me to recover? You know, stuff like that. And so I'm explaining to him what, you know, I hear the choice is his. That's why I was called in. I said, the choice is yours. And then I started to answer his questions, you know, like, how long did I think he would be in the hospital, you know, and his leg looked like it was gone, you know, and your leg will be amputated, you know. So I gave him as much data as I could from what I was seeing. And then he thinks about it for a minute, and he says, no, I think I'm going to go on. And then that's when he flatlined. After he left.
Oh,
as long as he was up in the corner,
incredible.
He didn't flatline. Yeah, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Well, you know, having the gifts that I was born with, which is to be able to, you know, talk to people that weren't necessarily in the body.
Yes, yes, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Oh, I would love to have that story. I'd like to put it in the newsletter.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Would you send it to me?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, I would love that. And give me permission to use it. I would
yes.
love
yeah,
to use
that. Yeah, because I think otherwise, if I didn't have that ability, I would have been told no, just, you know, don't go in, because obviously he was never going to get to the point where he needed his facial lacerations repaired.
Oh, my goodness.
But
yes,
yeah,
I appreciate that very, very much. You know,
we are coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Well, again, www.pmhatwater.com. I do publish a free monthly newsletter. You're welcome to send it to anybody and everybody you want when you get it. There's an archive so that you can go back and see previous issues. The August issue just went out 2 days ago, so you can certainly climb above that aboard that one and find out all kinds of interesting things.
I think I'm going to subscribe right after I hang up.
Oh, good, good, wonderful. Do you know?
So do you,
Last month, the July issue, when I gave the cycles to come, I lost 15 subscribers because they did not like that kind of information in my newsletter. They felt unbecoming. I don't know that that's the right word, but a researcher like me with my reputation should never get involved in that kind of stuff.
Well, do you think it was based on astrology?
Certainly it was based on astrology. It was also based on economic forecasting. It was based on birthing cycles. It was not just astrology. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe that'll get through. But it didn't. They didn't like it. So they signed off. So I thought, whoa, okay, well, I do the best I can. But, hey, folks, I'm open. The world is open. And I explore that openness in my newsletter. The newsletter is for the curious.
Right. Well, that's weird that they would unsubscribe. I mean, you would just think that they would just not read that newsletter and go to the next one.
No, they told me. They told me why. Yeah.
Really?
Oh,
my goodness.
One warning for everybody. Russia is now hacking anybody and everybody, emails all over the place. They've been after me. Fortunately, my email is monitored, so it catches this kind of stuff. But they're attacking just anybody and everybody now. It's just blatant. I've never seen anything like it before in my life, nor has my webmaster, nor has anybody else I've spoken to, but it's everywhere. So warning everybody, don't open links or attachments if you don't know the people.
Okay. Well, we've come to the end of our hour. I want to thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
It's been fun. This is Dr. Susan Kolb interviewing PMH Atwater. And we will be back next week with Dr. David Lowe. And please join us next week.
Okay, my dear. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.